found this in Ganarum. Ganamir Ni.
What is it?
Well, it's a performance.
Welcome to Synthaholics, guys. This is your host, David Duncan. With me is Aaron O'Brien and Faith Hertzberg.
Hey.
Hey.
Faith is not feeling so good today.
She has come down with the Andorian shingle sniffles.
Oh, that's rough.
Bless you.
Bless you, Faith.
But she's being a trooper and doing the best that she can.
Yeah, they dragged me in here. At least I was able to grab my tea.
With tea and honey in hand, she drinks from the fruit of the nectar of bees.
She stole it from Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah, totally. I had to mug him for my tea.
Oh, bother.
Faith stole my honey again.
And he always being a wanker.
He hasn't stopped whinging.
I was wanking in the woods when Faith stole my honey.
And little Piglet was watching.
Little Piglet, that little pervert, he was watching.
Oh, bother.
Christopher Robbins will hear about this.
Did you watch Pinky and the Brain ever growing up?
Yeah,
they
of
did the Winnie the Pooh spoof where it was Christopher Walken instead of Christopher Robin. Brainy the Pooh and Pinklet and Al Gore instead of Eeyore. It was like the best.
Yeah, I sort of remember that. There were a lot of weird ones for that.
Such a great show.
But
isn't the Pinky and the Brain cast.
No, or Winnie the Pooh.
Or the Pooh cast.
No, we're talking about a very special episode. We're talking about Star Trek Renegades.
The fan-funded film through Kickstarter.
With a lot of big names attached and a lot of big expectations.
Yes, indeed. But we do have some news first to get into this week. Aaron's girlfriend from Okinawa, the one before that.
Wow.
The log lady from your favorite show.
Right, yeah. So
that's not Star Trek.
I have a lot of shows I like other than Star Trek. But, yeah, Twin Peaks fame log lady Catherine Coulson, she passed away at 71. And the reason why we're bringing this up, obviously I love Twin Peaks, but also that she was one of the camera people that worked on Wrath of Khan. So, yeah, she's got a connection with Star Trek as well.
Star Trek connection.
If you've never seen Twin Peaks, the TV show that came out in the early 90s, she plays this odd lady who walks around with a log in her hand and who somehow witnessed the murder of this girl, and the log has clues to of how... And the main characters have to ask the log... What happened? So it's strange. It's strange, but that's why I love Twin Peaks. But yeah, so 71, it just seems so young. I mean, I know it seems old to a lot of younger people, but it's not that old.
I mean, people are living to 80s, 90s, and in their hundreds nowadays. Yeah. I saw like an article the other day, like some guy who's 100, 102, 103, like did a marathon race or something.
Right, right.
So people are living long with our modern technology, and people live even longer, like Chekhov does in this film.
Yes, he lives very long.
But also, I'm not sure if she actually passed away yesterday as of the recording of this episode, but also yesterday as of the recording of this episode was the 28th anniversary of Encounter at Farpoint.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another thing that kind of ties her in.
Yeah,
Star Trek.
Next Generation's first back in, I think it's 87.
Yep.
And I do remember that day when it came out, strangely.
I watched it live.
Yeah, I did too. I just remember, and I really, really thought, this is not going to work. I was very young, but I was like, this does not measure up to the original series. I think it just it didn't have the same feel to it, and that's what probably threw me off. It didn't have the adventure spirit, and it was a lot slower paced.
I didn't have that feeling because I was like 5.
I was a little older.
But I was definitely looking forward to it. My dad was a Star Trek fan. We'd watched all the original series on his rerun VHS tapes that recorded, and I had been getting Honey Nut Cheerios with the box top thing. You send in, you get one of those little metal Enterprises. Did you do that? It was really cool. It was like a metal, and the saucer came off from the bottom part. It was so cool.
I didn't.
And you could hit your sibling with it, and they'd hurt a lot because it was a solid chunk of metal.
So you use the Enterprise as like a brass ring.
Yes. It was big. I mean, it was probably like bigger. It was probably about the size of my hand now. Like, it was a decent-sized little toy.
Wow. And back, it was back in the day when cereal boxes really paid off.
Yes, Honey Nut Cheerios all the way. Yeah. Like I was excited for Star Trek: The Next Generation. I was like, oh, like this is the, I keep seeing the pictures on the cereal box, so I want to see the thing on the TV now.
Right, right. That's cool. I didn't even know they had that.
Yeah, I guess you weren't eating cereal, or at least Honey Nut Cheerios.
I don't know. I don't know what I was eating.
Yeah. This show is brought to you by Honey Nut Cheerios. Not really. If only General Mills would sponsor us. They got the factories down by the lake.
I know. We should just go ask them.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, hey, could you sponsor this?
You want to sponsor a podcast?
Like, get off our property, you geek.
You see the no soliciting sign.
We want to solicit for you. What are you talking about?
So yeah, we have that. And was there another news item that we're going to bring up?
Star Trek Beyond finished. They wrapped filming.
Really?
Yep. They're done.
That's crazy.
I'm sure there'll be reshoots and whatnot. That's as the nature of film goes. But I don't think there's anything. They're done with principal photography from what I've read.
Wow, amazing. Cool, very cool.
So maybe we'll get a trailer soon. Maybe it'll be in front of Star Wars.
I bet you it will. I guarantee you we will. You know that J.J. Abrams guy?
Yeah.
We're continuing the thing he just dumped off.
It would be hilarious, the Star Wars trailers in front of Star Trek.
Yeah, yeah.
That would be great.
So let's get into Renegades. Let's dig into this. This was long awaited for a long time.
I mean, I've been waiting for this thing for at least 2 years. Like, I've known about it for a long time.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think I knew about it when the Kickstarter. I mean, I guess I'd heard about it. I think they talked about it for a really long time. I'm not sure the exact origins, but I've been waiting for this for at least a year.
Yeah,
not two.
It seemed like it's been a very long time. This was like in the works, and I was kept on wondering, when is this thing going to come out? And back in August, I think August 15th it came out, and August 24th it was released, and it came out on YouTube. Strangely enough.
Well, I mean, they have to. They can't sell it. Your pledges for the Kickstarter would have gotten you a DVD or digital copy or a DVD, something like that.
Right.
To release it to the whole audience, you know, so they can get, you know, more backers for the future project, they had to release it on YouTube.
Right. So that's the cool thing. You can definitely you can just YouTube Star Trek Renegades, and you can watch. Is it like an hour and a half or so?
I think it's runtime's like,
yeah,
shows
it's
like
an
128 minutes, yeah. But I want to say the last like 20 minutes is like credits.
Right. But
it's decent length.
Oh, yeah. It's long. But it's something you can really dig into and enjoy, you know, on your tablet or whatever you watch here.
Sneak and watch and work.
Sure.
Come to YouTubes.
Have that kind
it's
of job.
Watch on the way to work.
So we have what we have here is the character of the daughter. I guess it's the bastard daughter
I don't know. Let's get into speculation on this later. Let's kind of go through the rundown of the thing, and then we can speculate on all the fun.
Well, I was bringing it up is that we see Lexa Singh in prison, and she's reciting the poem Invictus. Which is she's writing on the wall as she's in prison.
In a prison.
Yeah, and that's our first opening scene and first shot of her. And then the next scene we have is the Rule 7 that's under attack by these odd aliens. That's
called the Siphon.
The Siphon. And they're killing everybody.
They're killing them, and apparently there's something called Last Right, where one of your prisoners comes up to you and you get to kill them, and
yeah.
You can claim it if you're badass enough. Barada's son wants to claim this.
Barada's son is the teenager. He's like, Dad, lend me the keys to the car, man.
Can I slit this guy's throat, please?
You're not ready. You don't have enough responsibilities yet. You don't know what it is to be a man.
Your braid's not long enough, son. Once your braid gets a little bit longer, we can talk about letting you kill them, right. Some folks.
Once you get a haircut and a real job, then we'll talk about first kill.
Until then, I'm your daddy, and daddy do the first kill.
I do all the first kills. Yeah, Barada's killing people left and right. And
they've got these handy little bones that come out of, like, they're like Wolverine.
Yeah, Wolverine.
Like mini Wolverines.
Yeah, mini Wolverines. They don't quite, but they do seem to kill people.
Three.
Yeah.
They look blunt as hell, but, like, they cut people up.
They're killing people with them. And
seems like it'd be hard to fit your hand to a tight place. Like, oh, I dropped a screwdriver. I can't reach it.
Ah, oh, damn, my claws came out. I'm stuck. we end that the scene of the attack of the this planet with there's a weird obelisk with some writing on it, and it starts emitting energy and some weird sounds, and Barada and crew, they all take off and they warp out of the system, and then the planet kind of just like
winks out of existence.
Yeah, it just kind of disappears. So we know that Barada then, we really know he is the bad guy.
What gave it away?
It's bad enough that he's killing people with his knuckle spears, but now that he just destroyed a whole planet.
Disappeared a whole planet.
Yeah, he put that into his little bag of holding.
But next we find out if this is a myth or not, because Grant Imahara comes on screen and starts talking about it. And I think it was not a myth.
Yeah, he busted that myth really good. Yeah, we have a Mythbuster giving a presentation
to Chekhov. Admiral Chekhov.
Admiral Chekhov. And they're basically giving the rundown and how the planet or the... Are they called Siphons or Siphonians?
The Siphon. They just call them the Siphon, I think.
Okay.
The planet Siphon, and they are the Siphon, and they've just appeared in the last couple of months for some reason. Don't know why. They just kind of popped into known space. Somewhere.
Yeah, and they... yeah, that's the other thing, is they just kind of showed up.
From nowhere.
And they're just, like, kicking the shit out of everybody.
Oh, it's just to take a step back. It's about 10 years after Voyager comes home.
Yeah, this takes place in 2388. I believe that's the time it was put out there. So, yeah, it's a little bit in the future. And Chekhov is really old.
138 years old.
Yeah, he's...
I'll still be living when you're captain.
Yeah, I know. Man, so Chekhov, very old. And we during the presentation, we actually see that Tuvok's there in the room with him. And there's been multiple planets with dilithium mines that have been the same fate as hit them. They've disappeared from existence.
They're specifically targeting dilithium mines.
Right. And
to cripple the Federation.
And Chekhov is obviously concerned, and it seems like the Federation Council is going to give him a pass.
I know you killed a couple billion people, but it's okay. We're going to let it go.
The Borg are worse.
Borg scares more.
They're no Borg.
Yeah. So Chekhov wants to do something about it. Obviously.
At least it wasn't the planet Baku. You know, we got the life-saving radiation there, so that's fine.
But Tuvok says, I might have some a crew in mind. And he's like, we can't go through the usual channels. And then Tuvok says, don't worry, I got this covered.
Because Tuvok is the head of Section 31.
Right. So we see Alexa Singh... fighting in the prison with a Cardassian, and they're all taking bets and who's going to win. And
they're in Orion prison. You got some green men.
Yeah, it was an Orion prison. That's right. And they're fighting, and then Tuvok comes and he gives them the old Vulcan nerve pinch to the Cardassian that she's fighting, and he basically says, you know, I have, you know, information about your mother. He loses. It's her mother. He doesn't really say off the bat. And the next that he wants her for a mission, and that there's something that she does not want to go with him. She says,
"I'd rather get raped by the people in the gang ring, the gang rapers in on this prison, than walk out of here with you."
Yeah, she really does not like Tuvok, and
she doesn't like taking walks.
I have a hard time because Tuvok even said that. I mean, when he presented everything to her, he mentions to her that, you know, like, well, she said, you know, about the mission, and she says, yeah, like how Section 31 abandoned me to all these, you know, bad things that happened. It's like, wow, Tuvok just, like, left her cold.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, Tuvok, you're a dick. I don't know what happened in the past.
It comes with the things in Section 31.
Yeah, I guess you're just like,
But, like, why would you, like, kick out an augment? Like, I feel like...
She can't be controlled.
Well, you know, I feel like the backstory to, like, all the stuff in Renegades is more interesting than what actually happens in the film. Like seeing...
There's a lot of interesting characters.
Seeing Ichab getting kicked out of Section 31, seeing Lexa getting kicked out of Section 31. Like, all this stuff seems more interesting than what we actually got to see.
Right, right. And then we have... Tuvok mentions that he has information on her mother's whereabouts, that she might still be alive. And then this gives her the buy-in to join, and that she's going to help out Tuvok. And they're going to come back and try to find the crew of her old ship, the Icarus.
Meanwhile, the Icarus is being captained by some jerk, a nasty Noskin.
Yeah, he's pretty idiotic.
And he fires upon the Archer, a Federation ship, while they're trying to do some kind of maneuver to steal dilithium from them through their shields.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what the purpose was, but so
they were impersonating a Klingon.
I know, I understand that, but what they were exactly, why they were stealing it from their ship, you know, like,
I don't know. Anyway, the Nausicaan's really smart and decides to fire on both the Klingons and the Federation, making the Icarus the most wanted ship ever, and worthy of getting a medal to whoever captures them, apparently.
Yeah, and the USS Icarus is really awesome looking. I really like this ship.
Well, the front of it looks like a Vorcha-class cruiser, and the back of it looks like I'm not sure what.
I know. I just think it looks cool. I think that was a cool design.
It's a small ship, and the Archer's actually not even that big of a ship, too. Like, if you look at it, like, there's only one deck on the very edge of the saucer, and the Enterprise D is kind of like two or three decks.
Yeah,
like,
doesn't matter for me, as long as it looks cool.
You know? That's what she said.
Yeah. As long as it looks good, I'm all right.
I like the Enterprise D. It's a big ship.
I'm more personally interested in performance, but hey, whatever floats your boat.
Hey, it was like the cruise liner. It's got to perform good.
As we find out, unfortunately, the USS Archer does not perform very well.
Oh, no.
In fact, the captain even calls it a bucket of bolts. So
yeah, he does.
Captain Alvarez seems to be constantly getting best by the Icarus crew. So
apparently, he wasn't a fan of Enterprise. I mean, Jonathan Archer.
the Icarus basically they steal the dilithium, and at the same time they like sabotage the ship somehow. I'm a little unclear.
They beam some parts off the warp core. Like, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, and we have a guy who does this, Fixer, who is a grown-up, what's his name?
John Connor!
John Connor from Terminator.
He's got to save the future!
Yeah. Say hasta la vista.
Hasta la vista, baby.
Yeah, I was the whole time watching. I was like, why does he look so damn familiar? But he's like somebody I knew when he was younger. It was. And
you, Catherine Brewster.
So they escape and they warp out of there, and that's when we get some weird like cutaways here. Is we have a scene where Chekhov is meeting with his granddaughter
and her roommate,
and a roommate. And there's, I think we left that off too, because I think that was in the beginning when we first see Chekhov. Maybe I'm wrong.
The scene has no consequence. It doesn't matter where we pick.
But we
up.
Keep on running into Chekhov and his granddaughter or great granddaughter, who is
just starting Starfleet.
Yeah, she's a cadet, and I think they're trying to show like they have a relationship. and you know that she's, you know, he really loves her, and they, you know, they care for each other deeply. And there was a scene where she's like, you know, there's a, we talked about in Starfleet if we'd be able to sacrifice ourselves.
Oh, and they're talking in Admiral Nimoy Cemetery or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm like, that's a little on the nose. I mean, I understand what they're doing, but it just seems a little bit like.
Yeah, but
I wonder if he's related to Admiral Boudreaux.
Yeah. But the scene seemed out of place compared to all the action we just saw.
Yeah. Because it was a really cool spaceship battle between the Icarus,
yeah,
and
the three Klingon ships
and then the Archer.
Yeah, and then also we have this like really serene memorial, and they're both sitting, and you know, and she's talking about how she doesn't think she could sacrifice herself for lots of people, and Chekhov says just be true to yourself, and everything will be all right, you know, kind of thing, and. It just seems.
I think it made a lot of sense, though, with the way, because it gave you a breath from the scene before it, and it gave you a definitive point where each of these chapters separated, and it also put a lot of things in perspective that was about to happen.
Well, definitely, we do see what happens in the future, but it just seemed like a very quick change,
yeah,
from all that,
like not a gradual thing. It just was like quick, and then slow.
Yeah. So, and then next scene we have a ship that's trailing the Icarus. We have Alexa is catching up with them, and she somehow takes over the ship remotely.
Yeah, she used Kirk's trick against the ship where they got the codes.
She has the codes, and she makes them lower shields.
She learned from her dad, who's no longer living.
Yeah, like if Kirk ever does that, Dad, Kirk's dead. I've been telling you that for like 15 years now.
It's like they just reincarnated him somehow. Like,
yeah,
a Genesis device.
Right,
he's been alive this entire time.
And so she gets aboard, and she has like a dramatic walk on, and she kills the Nausicaan
in slow motion. It's really weird. Like there's a couple parts of them, it just gets like slow motion or like semi slow motion.
I kind of get why they're trying. Like, yeah, this is my ship. This is my thing.
They should have played this. Definitely the presentation moment.
Yeah, she was her
official introduction.
Yeah, this is like this is my badass. I'm captain here. And you're gonna find out. You know.
I loved that scene personally, just because it was very very cool. It's like, hey, wait a minute. There's finally a female actor that I can actually get behind, like, fully.
Yeah, she's...
Oh, yeah, she
Strong female lead.
Lex is definitely badass. I like the character.
Oh,
I just wish they would explain where she comes from. We'll talk more about that later. But, like, you know, have you seen Kill Bill? Like, you know, the crazy 88, that, like, the drum beat song? That would have been a great song for her to walk up and shoot the guy to.
Yeah.
Like, that would have been really cool.
Yeah, you know, this movie would have been so cool if they had, like, you know, sort of like Quentin Tarantino music put into it instead of, like, the typical Star Trek music. Because it is Renegade, so you can do anything.
Whatever you want. That would have been so great.
You can be total rock and roll and funk in there and stuff like that.
Well, they're already so far out of the box with Star Trek because, I mean, this is a completely different perspective. So, honestly, the music did kind of help tie it back into what it was.
Yeah, you're right about that, yeah. Faith. I mean, but because this
is a focal point.
Yeah, the music did kind of bring it back. But for whoever does video editing out there, I would love to see you do the Crazy 88. Just remix that scene and just, like, killer on one of the good beats. That'd be great.
So Alexa blows away the Nausicaan, when, you know, good riddance to that guy. And we have everyone. She's like, does anybody else have a problem with this? And her one guy,
Gary Graham.
Yeah,
whatever his actual name is, like.
Yeah, he's basically like, I'm personally glad to see you back, kind of thing. So. He's happy, so that's all back to
Ragnar's his name.
Yeah, Ragnar.
Gary Graham, like for male characters, he's like probably my favorite character in the movie next to Alexa, probably.
He's a really good actor,
and he
plays in a lot of different stuff, and he's always
Saval from Enterprise.
Yeah, he's in a lot of TV, a lot of movies, so he's very competent in what he does. So so she's aboard, and she's like, you know, obviously she's taken over. So this is the Icarus is back in her hands.
And then she calls a meeting, and then, you know, her Cardassian friend comes on, and there's of course a Bajoran guy, and they just carry out some stereotypical Bajoran Cardassian racism. And
stick measuring contest.
Well, but, like, I really don't get this. It's been, like, 15, 16... It's probably been, like, closer to 20 years since the occupation of Bajor.
And how many generations before that were they fighting?
And, well, and it's not even that to me. It was just like, you know, it's like, obviously everybody here has got their own things going on.
But no, but I mean, like, they just bring in this, like, stereotypical racism, like, just like, to kind of, like, solidify the fact that, oh, they hate each other. But at the same time, the Bajoran guy is a Pa'Wraith worshiper, and you know who popularized Pa'Wraith worship in the last, you know, 15 years? That was Gul Dukat, a Cardassian. Mm-hmm. So he should kind of like Cardassian, since he popularized Pa'Wraith worship with the Bajorans in the last couple seasons of Deep Space Nine.
Right. Right. It is a little. I don't know. I felt there's a in this the meeting with the crew where she kind of explains the mission. Everything with little character introductions. This is where I get a little bit like, okay, the script was not really hammered out that well. And we were talking about before
Ichab exposition.
Yeah, the where she talks with the Beta Z. What's her name? Rornar. Ronar, that she, he's like, stay out of my head, and she's like, I don't have telepathic abilities, and it just seemed
like
it was
psychokinetic abilities. Like, yeah, and I don't people's bodies.
I think that's a cool ability, but it just seemed weird that they're having this conversation together. Is like, how long have you been?
And
on
presumably they've been like, yeah. I feel like something that could have been done if they spread it out over like a couple episodes. Or, like they didn't have to like just shove all this exposition at us like so fast.
It's just that I think they could have done a few, made a couple lines and kind of insinuated a few things instead of like, because I think we can figure out like certain things, like, you know, like, I don't know, but
it's almost like a Shakespearean aside where they're taking the second just to explain it to everybody who's right. watching.
Right. So that was odd. I don't I like all the idea of all the characters.
Yeah, I mean, I like where they are. I just wish they would have.
I just think the writing was a little weird. You know,
been more subtle.
Yeah, I thought the writing was a little weird here and there. So, one other scene we just kind of skipped over was Admiral Paris shows up. to check
another link. Woot.
To Admiral Chekov's office, and he was like, "That was some interesting information you brought up to the council." And he was like, "Oh, I thought they should know." And he's like, "You're walking in a dangerous line, and you better, you know, keep your mouth shut," kind of stuff.
That's really timid for an admiral from Starfleet, because most Starfleet admirals are corrupt.
Right. Exactly. So. But, you know, we're getting the idea that there is some kind of Starfleet conspiracy going
Mumbo
on.
Mumbo jumbo.
Yeah, with the siphons. Like, somehow there's a connection. We don't really know what it is, but there's a connection, and we're not there, you know. Admiral Chekov's not to investigate, but, of course, Admiral Chekov will not back off no matter what it takes, even if it's the hand of his granddaughter.
Russians invented not backing off.
Right.
It was invented by Vasputin.
So
he didn't back off.
There's another interesting interaction. We have we have one of the other crew members. She is one of the doctors. She's a doctor, and she is dating Dr. Louis Zimmerman.
And Dr. Louis Zimmerman is mellowed out, let me tell you.
Yeah. Her name's Dr. Lucian.
Apparently getting some help.
Yeah, and he really wants Dr. Zimmerman really wants to test out the sexual capabilities
of this tactile holographic telephone system.
This could change everything.
It's like, this kiss is so
good.
For
scientific purposes, you have to make sure it functions properly.
That's right.
You test all aspects before you release a product.
Interesting thing, Dr. Lucian is actually the actress who played opposite of Harrison Ford in Blade Runner.
Star Wars tie-in. Woo!
Blade Runner tie-in.
Oh, Blade Runner tie-in, whatever.
But this was real, you know, and that's a great movie, and she plays an android in that movie. It's really awesome. I really didn't recognize her because it has been a long time since I've seen her in any movie, so this must be something she did because she really wanted to be attached to something like this. So I was surprised. So we have a backstory with her that she was tied in with Dr. Zimmerman. There was some accident with one of her experiments, and somehow she was ostracized by the scientific community because of it. And
because someone died during some experiment. I'm like, people die all the time during experiments. Why is this?
This is Star Trek. Everyone dies. It's like 5 minutes, someone doesn't get
if
blown up.
If someone's wearing red, they probably died.
And she steals some holographic projection emitter thing.
It sounds like it's the doctor's mobile emitter, but I don't think it is. But like, I don't understand. Like, you said it's the only mobile emitter, but you don't ever see.
Well, it's
she's holding it at the end.
Yeah, it's Fixer. That's part of it. So, anyways, we'll get into that. But
what happened to the doctor?
We'll be there in a minute.
So, anyways, so there's a connection there. Not really clear if there's future episodes of Renegades, if we'll see more Dr. Zimmerman, or if this was just sort of like a give her an introduction. So that's a little unclear at this moment.
Well, the future of Renegades is unclear in general.
But this is supposed to be technically episode one kind of thing.
Yeah.
If there's more in the future, we'll find out. Next scene we have is Chekhov enlists the help of an Andorian
brain hacker.
Yeah, brain hacker, spy for hire kind of thing. She is actually, this is a strange thing, this is crazy. She played in the Deep Space Nine Valiant as the Ferris, the sub or the lieutenant commander or commander to the captain, who was always giving Jake shit.
In other words, she died.
Yeah, she died. Yeah, but I wouldn't even recognize her, to tell you the truth.
No, she looks so different. And like, I saw a picture with her without her makeup, and she looks totally different. I mean, whatever they did with the Andorian makeup and the hair, like, she looks completely different.
Yeah, I would really like to be the guy applying the makeup to the boobs.
Is that a two-person job? Can I sign up for the second one?
Can I get on in this?
I bet Chekhov gets.
Yeah. So, but there's nothing more I like more than a buxom Andorian. So
bloobs,
bloobs. So we have he enlists her help that she's gonna crack into the Federation information computers and try to find out what they can't get into, because it was alluded to before that there's some access that Chekhov and Tuvok can't get information for.
How does Section 31 have access to everything?
Yeah, well, no, there's somebody's top in their game. So
Section 32.
So she's working on that problem. In the meantime, the Icarus crew are going to Planet Siphon to attack their home planet and get rid of assassinate the leader there.
Barada.
Yeah, Barada. And
I can't move my mouth very quickly.
My son can't have rice to first kill, so we must kill him.
My rights.
And we're going to they're kind of devising their own plan how to get into his fortress.
On the way there, they get attacked by the Archer, because nobody attacks my ship and gets away with it, gosh darn it.
Yeah, Captain Alvarez is like, he's got a vengeance. So I'm sure he's got other missions to do, but no.
No. He's right in violent orders.
He should be flying the vengeance instead of the Archer. Yeah, he's got a real hard-on for the Icarus and crew, and he's going to take them out. They fortunately, all they have to do is get into Siphon space, which apparently they're not allowed to cross into. And
because of that Federation treaty that maybe you're talking about, that with the stuff going on with Paris and Chekhov?
We don't know.
Don't know what's going on behind closed Federation
but
doors.
It's basically...
it's like the Illuminati.
It's like running the border, so yeah. So they just have to cross the border county line, and then they'll be okay. They take
Yeehaw! Let's get past the bonnet!
It's like Dukes of Hazzard. But they basically they outrun them, and Captain Alvarez is almost going to pursue him into Siphon space, but then at last minute he stops because Captain Alvarez is not your top captain that you think he should be.
No, he's so petty as to take revenge.
Yeah, he's sort of got that like kind of like slick Kirk look, but he's not Kirk.
No.
Kirk would have gone after him.
Kirk would have gone after him, and he you know, he gets hard-ons against Klingons.
Yeah, yeah. So, anyways, so they escape the Archer, and they go into some kind of stealth mode. They don't actually cloak.
Yeah, it's like go to stealth mode, and the ship like just flies on.
I don't know what stealth mode means, but it just means their ship's quiet.
The ship's powered down, the engines or something like that.
I don't know.
It was kind of strange. They brought it up. You didn't see an effect for it, and
right, and then. And then we have they get to Planet Siphon. They land without really any problems, probably because they're in stealth mode. And then they sneak into
That's what they want you to think.
They sneak into the sewers of Castle Grayskull to attack and assassinate Barada.
You mean Skeletor?
Snake Mountain. That's where Skeletor lived.
I'll get you, He-Man. She-Man.
So. They, of course, run into the guards and Barada's son, and Alexa just snaps his neck in a second.
It was awesome.
She doesn't even, like, give it a second thought. She's like, crack, you're dead. And Barada shows up out of nowhere, like, you killed my son.
He was just watching, apparently. He was close enough just to walk up.
He's like, he deserved to die.
Well, no, but like before this, the Bajoran's like, well, if you let me kill the Cardassian, then I'll tell you all you want to know. And then he just gets killed. It's like, oh, you're a traitor. Oh, we don't like those very much.
Yeah, that was a little odd. I have to admit that they just all of a sudden, he says, I'm going to tell you everything you want to know if you let me kill the Cardassian. So just for revenge for the Cardassian, he's willing to throw his whole crew under the bus.
That's how much he loves to hate Cardassians.
Right. So we didn't mention, too, is when they land, they leave the two crew members.
Rothgar.
Ragnar and Dr. Lucian. And they're kind of like monitoring the situation. Fixer's supposed to be on board too, but Fixer kind of sneaks off, and we don't really know what happens to them. In the meantime, Barada captures Alexa and the rest of them, and they're kind of all tied up and pretty beat up. And he actually
kills the Cardassian whenever he starts beating up on Lexa a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Poor Cardassian takes a. Knuckle bone to the throat.
Right, right. So,
it wasn't supposed to be your fight. I was supposed to be her fight, and we were supposed to fight. Because fighting is fighting. First right, first kill. Now I killed you. Now I can't kill her.
Kind of have a Bane kind of sound to it.
Bane, oh gosh. Do you like fiber? Do you fiber on your diet? Strawberries have lots of fiber. Barry, you ordered the pizza? That's an unhealthy choice.
You'll never get muffins like me.
You look like a blueberry muffin with eggs.
So, Barada Bane,
Bane Rada.
Yeah, so they're basically, I lost my train of thought.
Anyway, yeah, he ties them up. He walks off somewhere.
Right, and
the
fleet takes off. The Barada's fleet all leaves.
But Barada stays behind, and he's going off to his corner to wank or something. I don't know.
Yeah, he's wanking with Winnie. And
Don't bother,
it's Barada again.
You look scary when he wanks.
The faces he makes.
With his mouth that can't close.
The messes he makes. And the crew that's on the ship of the Icarus decide they're going to chase after
The fleet, because they're scared they're going to do something to Earth.
And Ragnar goes, well, what about the rest of the crew? And he's like, they knew this was a one-way ticket.
They're going to die. They knew it.
They knew it.
We're going to save ourselves in this really cool-looking ship.
So they take off, and they chase after them. While they're chasing after them, the archer's hiding, and the archer starts chasing after the Icarus and crew. And they go into warp, and they're heading. They're all heading towards Earth. That's the main thing. What happens next is really, really odd. Is Chekhov's granddaughter shows up, and she. Chekhov is in his office with
Shri and Talodin?
Talia.
Talia. Romulan.
Yeah, some odd alien Romulan.
She's a Romulan.
Anyways, they scan her, and she somehow has some kind of...
Oh, she sets off an alarm, and all these red lights start flashing everywhere.
Yeah, she's got some bomb implanted on her hand, some kind of tech nanobot thing that was put on. And basically, if she touches Chekhov...
Or gets too close to him, it'll go off.
Right. And Talia says there's only one thing to do, and she just cuts her hand off.
Phaser amputation.
Yeah.
This is metal, guys.
This is pretty intense.
This is really cool for Star Trek. I was like, that's pretty hardcore.
I was pretty
sure. She got her moment of self-sacrifice. She had that choice of, well, fuck.
At least good thing they didn't implant it in her head.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's true. That would have been...
Let's cut your head off with a phaser.
Yeah, yeah, that would have been... It was a very shocking scene for this.
Well, just for Star Trek in general. I mean, that's pretty intense for Star Trek.
Very surprising, and they took the time to build enough of a relationship to get you in the feels.
Yeah, it was very so.
It's just whenever the hand's cut off and beamed away, the Chekhov like emergency medical now.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
He says that twice actually, and.
Yeah.
No, it hasn't happened yet. It hasn't happened a second time yet.
Yeah. So they phaser off her hand, and
good thing it wasn't on vaporize.
Good thing it did not completely vaporize me. And we go back to Barada. He's basically torturing Alexa, and you know, giving him all hell, and you know, making him all feel like a bad day.
Well, then he wanders off again, and then some random snub comes up, and he's like talking about wanting to get with that hot
Betazoid. A lot of talk about rape in this.
He's like, I read up on our sexual organs. They do match up. I think I can have my way with you.
Yeah.
and then Icheb's like, don't talk to her. And he's like, want me to try it out on you first?
Yeah, and he's gonna do him, and then all of a sudden,
his hands like start shaking, and she's doing her telekinesis thing since she can't actually read minds.
Right, like, and he's like, we are strong, we are strong, and then
we're stronger than you, folks.
She has him cut the wires or whatever's holding them.
They're being held up by wires.
And
Icheb with his handgun, he's Mega Man. He shoots things at his hand.
Yeah, he kills him, and then they're all free, and they're all ready to kick ass again.
You know, but the funny thing is in the scene, the Cardassian guy is, sitting against the wall without any blood on his neck or his throat slit. He's just kind of sitting there. I'm like, why is he sitting there? I thought he was dead, in the hallway somewhere else.
Yeah, he actually shows up a couple. I don't think he died. I think he just really hurt him really bad.
Because he doesn't beam back to the office at the end. He's dead.
Hey, we left him back on the planet.
Like, oh, we did.
You assholes! I was hurting everything.
He was my sparring partner.
So you have to give up a red shirt every episode. You volunteered.
Yeah, I know. Well, we already lost the Betazoid.
We get two pretty much back-to-back. The Betazoid dies, and then seconds later, his throat is slit.
It just shows that racial tension shouldn't happen.
Yeah, that's right.
You see, if you are a racist against somebody and you want to kill that other person, someone's going to kill both of you for each other.
You're just both going to die.
You're both going to die.
So the lesson here is don't be racist.
Don't be a racist. Accept all. So
that way someone will kill both of you.
The Siphon fleet shows up to Earth, and there is a shield around planet Earth somehow that is ready to.
It's like a big cloud. It just blocks out Earth from the sun. So
I'm having a hard time understanding why they just don't just get rid of planet Earth.
No, you got to add tension for some reason.
This is the one part I'm like, they have the power just to make the planet Earth disappear, and yet they don't do it.
Well, the Mythbusters show back up again.
Right.
With a knife in Admiral Paris's back, and it turns out he is.
I love when Admiral Paris goes down. He's like, down I go.
I'm old. I don't want to break a hip when I'm falling.
I actually replayed that scene a couple times because it made me laugh so much.
You want to play the Benny Hill music with it?
Admiral Paris gets stabbed in the back by Mythbusters. Mythbusters is like a... I don't even know what he is.
I think he's the reason why the Earth doesn't go away completely. He wants to rain terror on the Earth. He probably gets his neck strapped. He gets his neck snapped by what's her face with the big eyebrows.
Talia
with the big eyebrows, the Romulan. His neck is probably snapped, and Chekhov's like, no, wait, no, we need to get information. And then some little, ghost, sparkle thing flies out. And it's some different alien. We don't know what it is. It's never explained.
And this is, I'm hoping that if they do more episodes that more of this will be kind of, laid out. Because this is, what was that?
Is it the hate monster's
Redheaded
stepchild?
Yeah, there's a lot of,
only happens to work with one person at a time.
There's a lot of things that I'm a little, that's a little unclear. So, they kill him, and then they...
Shree, with her bloobs and her little mind things.
Her bloobs.
She puts the thing on the head of the guy, and he's able to extract some information.
She puts her boobs on his head, and she can read his mind.
I got special implants that do things like that.
Well, now that we know what you're thinking about.
That's all I think about when Tree shows up.
Oh. I bet that's what Chekhov was thinking about, too. Who? I get to work with bloobs today.
Bloobs out here. So
save the day.
That's why he keeps on hiring her.
It's going to get expensive.
Yeah, it is.
Lots of blue paint.
She said that she's going to double her rate, too.
Huge tracks of land.
Yeah. So planet Earth is covered with this cloud which is blocking out the sun. And basically what's going to happen is that the planet's going to just freeze, and then after a while, everything's going to die. And even with their, Federation's power reserves on planet Earth, they just can't survive for that long. So,
but luckily, the planet's going to get sucked into the void within a matter of hours or minutes or whatever it is at this point.
And
so they don't have to worry about freezing to death.
The next scene is, it kind of jumps back and forth between Castle Grayskull on planet Siphon and on Earth and outside Earth. Planet Siphon, the crew is free. Fixer shows up. He's got weapons, and they're ready to kick ass. And
chew bubble gum, but they're all out of gum.
Exactly. And then back on Earth, the archer that followed the USS Archer committed by Captain Alvarez still got the hard-on for Icarus and crew, and he's going to take them out. He thinks that what's going on has to do with the Icarus, and he starts shooting them.
The Icarus made that planet disappear.
Yeah, these
I'm the smartest cookie in the bunch.
Those little bastards did that. Well, and the funny thing is, too, is so they basically just fire a crap load of weapons at them and disable the Icarus, and they beam aboard, and they take on some kind of weird hollow emitter.
Yeah, Ragnar makes himself look like Chekhov, and they're like, oh, we got to get back to the Admiral Chekhov's
thing. It's real important I get back to base, and... lieutenant commander of the Archer says, yes, we'll get you beamed over. So they beam down to the planet, and they beam down to Chekhov's office, and there's two Chekhovs. And Ragnar shows who he really is, and he knocks out the Archer's lieutenant commander, security officer. And so now we have Ragnar with Chekhov, and we have Dr. Lucen down there as well. And they're all together, and they're going to figure out what's going on with Earth, because Earth is obviously going to be destroyed.
And Dr. Lucen takes the little brain thing that Shuri got from Grant Imahara from Mythbusters, and she's like, oh, I can see it. Yeah, there's some bad stuff happening to Earth, and there's an obelisk at his quarters.
Yeah, he snuck that obelisk back in. He says, just put that in there, boys.
Like, he's just like carrying it on his back. It's like, yeah, just nothing.
Yeah, just
don't mind me.
Put that in there, boys. So,
got some myths to bust in here about rocks.
We had to make sure if this actually worked. And so somehow Dr. Lucen must be like a super duper genius, because she has this all figured out pretty quickly. And somehow they can communicate to the other obelisk, which is back on planet Siphon.
Well, she can't communicate through the obelisk. She can communicate with Fixer, because she's got some kind of thing that she's rigged up with Fixer.
Same thing we saw with Dr. Zimmerman, that she could bring him from wherever he was, Jupiter Station or wherever he said he was, and that they could talk, you know, from... You know,
great distances.
Yeah, great distance, yeah. And
Lexa makes the noble sacrifice. I'm going to stay and get this thing done. And everyone gets back. Fixer gives her the old hypo, knocks her out.
It wasn't Fixer, actually. It was, what's his name, the Borg.
I thought Fixer gave her the hypo.
No. Egypt, yeah. Egypt does that. He knocks her out, and Fixer says he'll stay behind. He's like, you know.
I thought it was Fixer, since Fixer was making the sacrifice. Egypt just like, oh, Fixer, you can stay here.
Well, he's John Connor, so he figured.
John Connor!
Yeah. And so they put the transport the obelisk on Earth back to Siphon
with using the obelisk somehow, and then that obelisk
they just basically warp the planet Siphon away. In the meantime, just before that, Alexa kicks Barada's ass.
Shoots some stuff on, makes it fall on him, but he's still not dead, and then he realizes that he's getting ready to suck into the void.
Yeah, and I think she stabs him a couple times in the gut. She thoroughly kicks his ass, and
double tap method is necessary.
She is, except she forgets the double tap of the head part. She stabs him a couple times, doesn't kill him.
They're out of my back.
I mean, you know, working on refining their method.
And after they save Earth, Chekhov basically tells them that they're still wanted.
Oh, we can't tell everyone that you did this.
Because we have our good reputable names. We can't be smirched by you folks.
And then Tuvok doesn't tell her about her mom.
Yeah,
I'm like, I don't understand. It's
like, I have information. Like, he's like, he's
Chekhov's like, no, you don't want that yet. I'm like, what?
Yes, I do.
This is the whole reason. What does that have to do with anything?
I've been having these dream sequences while I'm fighting Barada, thinking about my mom. So yeah, hell yeah, I want to find out about it. And and then it kind of like leads off that they're going to have more adventures in the future, and
Shuri and.
And Talia. Are going to join us. So it's a full crew of definite misfits and rogues. So,
like, I think it's really interesting casting. It's really cool that it's got a very strong female cast. I mean, going forward, it should have a very strong female cast, because most of the crew is female except for Rothar and
Ragnar
and Icheb.
Yeah, yeah.
So it'll be pretty interesting. It'll be like basically reverse dynamics. Usually there's like one or two women, and now there's just going like one or two men. And going forward, it'll be pretty interesting to see where it goes. Mm-hmm. Terry Farrell has announced that she will be in future episodes should they be crowdfunded.
What's the feeling takeaway from this?
Want to go first, Faith?
For me, it feels like a Star Trek version of Firefly.
Mm-hmm.
I've completely fallen in love with it, because for the first time ever, there's finally a strong female lead. Because Janeway was okay. Like, she was really good as a captain, but holy crap.
Lexa's badass.
Lexa's got it. She's a badass.
Yeah, she's cool.
I like her.
I like her a lot as a character, but I wish they would have, like, you're like, everyone's like, oh, you're Singh's daughter. Like, everyone seems to know that how she exists, but she doesn't. And I just find that really annoying. And I wish they would have let the audience in on it, even if they didn't let Lexa in on it. Like, it's,
I think,
just
that's something that that's the hook about her, is finding out about her character and watching it evolve as the series progresses. That each of these episodes is going to give us something more, like a little bit more insight as to who she is and why she is the way she is.
Right.
Well, I mean, just in Star Trek, I mean, Star Trek fans are so big on the canon, and this is such a huge gap, saying that, you know, they should have hinted something. Like, even if they didn't come out and say it, they should have hinted at more how it's her daughter, his daughter.
It doesn't add up time-wise, but...
Unless there's some frozen space seed floating around.
Anything's possible in a sci-fi. So they could have been frozen in time. They could have somehow gone back in time and gone back forward. You know, there's a lot of stuff that could have been... I mean, there's a lot to be thought about. I mean, I personally think, having Chekhov that old seems kind of crazy to me. And having an older Tuvok, too. I think they could have placed this back in the time, like right after... Undiscovered Country, and it could have worked because he had Tuvok as well, during that time. But he wouldn't.
Chekhov wouldn't have been that old, though.
Yeah, that's a good point. But, I mean, it doesn't have to be right then. It could be, like, during, Enterprise C, kind of time period and stuff like that.
I like the post-Voyager world where everything's dark and scary.
I don't know. So you like the obviously the female lead is she did good, and she's a commanding presence on screen too. She's definitely she's got the look of a lead role.
Very well done.
Yeah, of a lead role of somebody who's going to take the reins of something like that.
Got the confidence and the self-assured factor. Like she knows where she stands in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely like her as a character. She's really cool. She carries herself really well. I just, I like her, as she is, but I think, her backstory is kind of make or break her for me a little bit in, terms of continuity-wise, because I'm just, if they don't do a good job explaining, how she is, it's just, I think it's going to fall apart a little bit for me personally. Hopefully, the story will be good, or the rest of the story will be good around it. So maybe I won't care as much. But
right
now, just the fact that they didn't even try to explain it could is disappointing.
It could have been, maybe just someone had the sperm samples of Khan somehow, and they injected the mother with it.
Bones took some other stuff whenever he was getting examined.
Right. No, but that's a possibility. They could have done that, and then she could have taken the genes of Khan as well. I mean, there's a lot to be said. What could have been? I do kind of feel it's kind of shitty that Tuvok doesn't give her the information at the end of the.
Tuvok.
It's like Tuvok screws her over again,
screwing her over.
Yeah, I really think Tuvok really gets a bad rep by the end of this thing because he just doesn't come through as a really stand up guy.
No, not at all. I don't know why they're kind of doing such a discredit to his character.
Yeah, because I like his character in Enterprise. I think this is a little bit like
Voyager.
I mean, yeah, I'm sorry, Voyager, but yeah, so. Yeah, I don't know. So, that being said, there are things I liked about this. I don't want to bash it too hard just because I know it's crowdfunded. This isn't backed by studio, but
it's a work of love. But we also all love Star Trek here, and definitely have an opinion on what Star Trek is and how it kind of should be. Sort of.
There are really cool scenes, and there's really cool acting, and then there's parts where I'm like that. Somebody should have been there should have been a producer or somebody behind it saying you could do better than that. And it has to do across the board. There's some acting I think could have been done a little better. There's some editing I think that could have been done a little better. And there's definitely a couple spots where writing I think they could have put
more subtle.
They were beating you over the head. Like I said, when
the exposition stick.
Well, when they're trying to give the introduction of the characters, I just thought that was just too rushed and too much information all at once, and it just didn't seem real to me. So, and both actors are competent actors that were in that scene, so there's no reason why they weren't screwing up their lines.
I don't know. I feel like maybe they just weren't allowed to do too many takes, maybe. Maybe it was part of the budget where they just couldn't do too many takes. Like, if they got the lines and didn't start laughing, it was good enough to just to go forward.
And start laughing.
Well, you know, I mean, you know, there's always outtakes and stuff like that. You know,
this is ridiculous.
Or, you know, they say something, they laugh, and, you know, if they're funny outtakes, and you watch them on the special features or whatever. I'm sure, but I mean, like, if they got the lines right and they didn't start laughing, then I guess they kind of had to go forward, almost feel like they didn't need to take, like, lots of takes or anything.
Right. That's a possibility. I mean, there's a lot of things that we're not taking into account because we weren't there for the production and the filming. So we don't know all those things. So,
I just hope they tighten things up in the next one.
Yeah, I do too. I think I really think they were trying to tell too big of a story. You know, for their. But I think it was like they're like they have this crazy idea, and they could have done a two-parter. They could have.
Yeah, I wish they would have like maybe spread out this story into maybe like a two-part, like you're saying, like maybe like build the characters a bit more without having to do all the exposition.
Right. That was my takeaway. I do enjoy it. I think there's like after the second scene after we see Alexa in the prison, the whole scene where they're attacking the lithium planet. It's not well done. They could have done so much other. Just even the framing of some of the the attack of the planet was just so odd.
Yeah, it was definitely strange. Like the fire shooting up in front of the facility didn't need to be there. Like the establishing shot of the planet was absolutely gorgeous. Cool. And that's all they needed to do, and they could have just shown the inside from there, like this outside establishment.
Well,
shot.
Barada was like talking to like people, and in the background behind him was like fireballs flying up and stuff. I'm like, what is? Does that need to be there? You know, I don't know, just little things like that. It's not like huge things like that. It's not huge. But it's just little things. Just like, why did they even put that in there? Like, what is that to gain? When planet Earth is getting is covered with this, you know, the shielding.
Yeah,
it's like it's the effects are so corny looking. I'm like,
and they're showing them off. It's like they're stage marking them.
Yeah, and there's there's parts that are great, and then there's parts that are like, why did you put that in there? Like you guys are so much better than that. Like what happened? Like was that a different studio who did that? You know, I don't know. Like. I mean, they have great opening scenes of, like, you know, San Francisco Starfleet, you know, where...
Yeah, those are pretty nice.
Oh, they're amazing, and they're just so cool looking. And then they have that weird, like, you know, Aurora Borealis thing going on, you know, and it's just, like, so strange, yeah.
Like plot-wise also, one of the things that kind of bothered me was that, you know, when they're tied up, you know, he's like, well, you know, we had to adapt because the Federation sent this to us 300 years ago, and I'm like... And then I'm glad Lexa came in and was like, yeah, Federation wasn't around 300 years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, like, that's an interesting
part. And then they left it hanging.
Yeah, that's a thing. I'm guessing the Sparkle people planted them.
Yeah.
Because the Sparkle person was the person who...
Yeah, because Mythbusters was taken over by Sparkle people. And, these obelisks that show up. We don't know the origins for, so that's still a mystery. So I'm assuming...
I'm guessing the Spark people, the Spark Mythbuster people invented the obelisks and framed the Federation somehow. Or maybe they're like, they've been in the Federation all along, just like the little slug people from, from the TNG episode.
TNG, right, where they have conspiracy,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, conspiracy, yeah.
Yeah, I don't. You know, there's a lot to think about that. I mean, I'm only can assume that they're going to go back and explore that. Because if they don't, then this makes this into a very poor opening episode, you know, writing-wise. Like, nobody wanted to give a firm explanation. So I'm assuming there has to be another story, like
a follow-up
story. I
feel like the Siphon are out of the picture. The Barada's gone and their planet's gone. So, like, yeah. I don't know, like...
Unless it transported them someplace else, you know, so... You know, that there's some interesting intrigue to what could happen next. I mean, obviously we have a lot of backstory. I mean, we have Lexa's backstory. You want to find out, you know, the obelisk.
Where they come from.
And the Sparkle, where they're coming from. The conspiracies within the Federation. There's more going on there than we know, obviously. There's people, other people that are working with whoever the conspirators were.
Yeah. I kind of hope Jerry Ryan. I know Terry Farrell signed on. I don't even know who Terry Farrell will play because they killed Jadzia. So I don't know what she would do in the next one. It would be interesting to see what they do. Maybe she's got a twin sister who didn't die, does not join. I don't know. Or maybe she'll just play some random person. Maybe not even be a Trill.
Yeah, it's possible.
I kind of would like to see Jerry Ryan join only because, like, Icheb was, like, had the very strong, like, mentor-mentee relationship with Seven and the in Voyager. Yeah, and I don't see him, like, leaving her, like, willy-nilly. Like, even if Section 31 really sucked. Like, assumingly, I would assume 7 of 9 would have been part of it, too. And,
Well, here's the other thing is that
I just don't see, even if it sucked, I don't see him leaving her side.
Here's the other problem I have with this, and it goes beyond this film or this episode, is Section 31 that they're using these underhanded tactics. They're like, your crew are doing things that our crew cannot do. Well, obviously, their crew has, like, they all have their own little special abilities and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But my feeling is that the Federation is put up on these principles. Do you believe the principles or do you not believe the principles? And as if that's the case, like, you know, then you conveniently excuse yourself from these things when it's easy for you. And I really have an issue with that. And I know we will talk more about Section 31 later, but I still think this is like another example of like we're going to use these people because.
But at the same time, Section 31, they're not even in Section 31. They're rejected from Section 31. I thought the only way out of Section 31 was the end of a phaser pistol or something like that.
Well,
like,
obviously, like, these folks are it can get beyond their reach. Yeah, but my thing is it's like. It's like, you know, America using black ops sites to interrogate terrorists. We don't do torture, but if we send them to black ops sites, you know, in Russia or some offbeat place and torture people, then it's okay because it's not by Americans and we can buy the material and we can the information that from the interrogations. Well, what do you believe in? Do you believe in torture is bad, or is it just because you're bound by law? You know, it's like one of those things. Like it's that's a really, really crappy way to enact policy,
yeah.
You know, and that's the problem I have with the Section 31 and using the Renegades crew for the Icarus seems very much like, you know, like, oh, we don't like to, you know, deal with the dirty work, so we're gonna have you do it instead, you know. It's like, you know, I don't know, it just seems dumb, you know.
Yeah, but it makes for a good episode. I mean, oh,
I agree,
very much a classic plot.
I think they could have just said, like, you know, space pirates. You know, I mean, because that's kind of what they are. You know,
basically.
It would have been even cooler if there was, like, takes place in the Star Trek universe and they were space pirates, you know?
That's the thing. Like, you know, Section 31's got all this technology that the Federation doesn't have. I don't see these runaways, like, having technology to outfox Section 31. I don't know how.
Well, when you're
success, I mean, I guess Tuvok can direct them away.
When you're fighting Captain Alvarez, oh, you got me, guys, again. You guys outran me. Oh, I'll get you guys.
I'll get you guys next time, man.
Cooter.
Are you channeling the Jar?
Yeah, no, I just. No, I was doing Cooter from Dukes of Hazzard. No, anyways,
but like you were talking about last week, the ethicalism of holograms, like Fixer, like, oh yeah, Fixer died, but then Fixer came right back, and like it turns out,
it's like, is there something on my shirt? Yeah. No, you blew up and you disappeared on planet. It's okay.
No, you totally died on us, and now you're standing there.
You're standing there. No big deal.
Like,
and the rest of the crew doesn't say anything. The other rest of the crew is like, Fixer, you're still alive. Oh my god.
Yeah, they managed to all take it in stride.
They're like,
you can still save us in the robot apocalypse.
They're like, oh, Fixer showed up.
John Connor!
John Connor's still here. Okay. So, I don't know. You know,
John Connor fixes ATM machines and they gives it to them the monies.
He came a long
way. That's
why
they call him Fixer.
He's come a long way. Yeah, so there's like that was my ethical dilemma with this, and I know we're gonna
taking the dead person's brainwaves, putting it into a hologram, and killing it over and over again for your
sick pleasure.
Now we know what they did to the last hologram.
That's right. That's why she was ostracized by the scientific community. So Dr. Lucius, she's not that nice.
I wonder what else she did to the hologram.
Yeah.
Just for scientific evidence.
What else does Fixer fix?
You have to repeat this experiment over and over and over again to gain empirical data.
Right.
It's not her fault. It's the way science works.
That's right. Just a lab rat.
Scientisms.
I enjoyed a lot of all the little characters and that are there, but I think there are some. Unless they're allowed to explore these characters further in the storylines further, this episode doesn't stand up as strong to me. It definitely needs follow up with a lot of things. So,
oh, it does. It definitely doesn't stand on its own. But for impact for the first run, it was definitely it made its stances not only Star Trek but unique.
It has that.
It's definitely different, and I think
I feel it had more of a Star Trek presence than the two most recent movies. Personally,
it has. It definitely has the feel for it. I don't mind that they're the, you know, kind of these rogue pirate crew. I'd like to see a little more. If it's not like high-minded ethical behavior, I would hope that they have that down deep. And I think they do. It seems like they do, but there's a lot of like questions hanging. So
I think ethics are kind of like out the door a little bit in this. Because I mean, when she first sees Shree, she's mind raping a girl. Chekhov's like, "Oh hi, oh come call me when you're done."
Yeah, that was
just kind of like,
it's just
kind of
like, it's just like, yeah, once you're done raping her and mind raping her, come to my office.
Yeah, a lot of raping. I don't know.
Yeah, they're
that.
Kind of in the face with that, which is a little surprising.
Yeah,
for sure.
I don't, but
like a blunt show right there.
Yeah, I don't dig that. I actually there's a line I kind of
felt like we were channeling Tasha Yar a few different times.
Oh yeah, like the rape gang. Like, I was just like, oh, so prisons that have rape gangs. Which, that's interesting. Or is that just the shower?
Who knows?
I don't know.
It's in Dorian prison. I guess anything could happen there.
Orion.
What did I say?
Andorian.
Andorian.
The blue ones, not the green ones.
Oh, yeah. Well,
except if you're colorblind. It's all good.
Yeah. Well, one has antennas. The other ones don't. Yeah, I don't know. I just I think...
The other one's good at dancing.
It's one of those things with movies and stuff like that. If there's like a rape scene, I really don't even like it. I just turn it off. It's one of those things. I can take horror movies and stuff like that. I think that's like just going too far in my book. You know, some people can like it's just a reenactment or it's just like, you know, thing. I think there's people who get off on that shit and I don't like it. So it's not my thing.
Yeah.
And I thought they were a little like, I think they were a little like throwing the rape card out there a little bit too much. I'm like,
just a little bit.
Okay, we know it's an all female crew, and maybe you can allude to it maybe once in a while, but you've done it like five times or so far. So,
One guy wasn't discriminating; he was willing to do it with the Echeb too.
Yeah. Again, scientific purposes, you need to test everything. Yeah. Try it at least once before you say no.
Yeah.
So they'll be doing a new. Kickstarter or Indiegogo in the near future. I want to say it's like beginning of October.
I haven't seen. I don't know when they're planning on that.
It's soon, so
I am curious to see what happens with that. Because so they pitched it to Paramount,
CBS, and CBS said no.
Yeah.
And
I think with good reason. I think there's. I just wish there was like. Whoever was producing it, you know, who's behind, I wish there was a few more people to go like be the official like chief editor, go like, it could be a little bit better. You could make that scene a little bit better, you know, reshoot that scene.
It might have been the money. I think they made like less than a quarter million. It was like pretty low.
I know. And I'm not, you know, it's obviously not this big studio production, but there were just little things I think they could have fixed that could have really like, if they...
Well, hopefully enough people liked it so that they'll give lots of money to the next one.
My feeling, too, is like what's going to happen with like Axanar and Pike and stuff like that when these things come out. If they're like better or better produced, will this become just like kind of pushed to the side because people will be like more excited about Axanar or more excited about the other ones?
Well, Axanar's already made over $1 million. It's got lots of money going to it already. The 20-minute prelude was amazing, and, you know, I don't know, like... I don't even know when the movie's going to come out. I don't even think it's coming out until 2016 or 2017. Like, it's, they just started shooting it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's...
it's going to be a while, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, as long as Renegade's still to come out, like we said at the beginning.
I am curious to see what the how soon they'll come up with the next one, because this, like, this first one took a long time to come out.
Yeah, it all depends on how much money they make, I'm sure, and if it's a successful Kickstarter. So hopefully we'll know something soon.
Yeah, yeah, it's interesting. It's worth watching, and definitely if you're a Star Trek fan. You know, if you haven't watched it yet, definitely take time to watch it. It's entertaining.
It's very different.
Yeah,
yeah, it's
not,
very different.
It's not your father's.
It's not your everyday Star Trek.
No.
But it's still good. And it's Prime Universe Star Trek, and I know a lot of people, that'll make a lot of people happy just because it's Prime Universe.
Yeah, and it's kind of Mad Max Star Trek.
Or Firefly and Star Trek.
Yeah, or Firefly,
like,
yeah.
Yeah. Kind of cool.
It very much had the feel of the feminine Firefly crew. It was kind of like, oh, hey, yeah. I like this.
This, it could be cool. I could see a lot happening. It would be nice to see where they take all these characters.
Hopefully it'll just definitely get better from here.
Yeah, it's definitely got the potential to go somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Just a quick reminder, guys, we do have our Patreon account going on. So if you, you know, feel generous, come on and, like, you know, make one of the pledges. And
yeah,
you know,
check out the pages and see what the see what we have, and something maybe you could afford.
And, you know, most of the things give you a little bit of something. Either you can get some behind the scenes, get some of our digital artwork for the episodes, maybe participate in an episode. There's a couple of things that you can get for joining. So
absolutely.
We'd love it if you did. And, you know, if you, you know, are not able to give money, share the show with other people.
Yeah, share the show. Tell a friend. Tell a stranger.
Rate it, comment about it.
Yes, rates and comments.
Any of these things
would be fantastic. That'll you know, if you rate and review us, that'll hopefully get us up where other people can see us without you having to tell other people if you're ashamed of us for whatever reason.
Or just tell somebody at the bus stop.
Yeah, exactly.
Do that. Just do that.
Want to listen to something funny? Synthaholics. That's like, a funny thing.
Don't talk to me!
Well, you know, maybe you should tell your friends and not the stranger at the bus stop. Unless the stranger at the bus stop is wearing a Star Trek shirt, then maybe like, hey, have you heard Synthaholics?
Yeah, yeah.
But,
check
you know.
These guys out.
We try to have fun, and we want you to spread that fun to all of humanity.
Let them know.
Let them know.
Let the word spread.
Like butter over too much bread. No, not Lord of the Rings reference.
No, that doesn't work.
Sorry.
Let the word spread like butter.
Like the spice on Arrakis.
Wow. Nice reference.
The word must flow.
The spice must flow. Like Synthaholics on Arrakis.
Synthaholics.
Aaron and I will be at the Buffalo Comic Con October 17th and 18th.
We're there, so if you're in the
northwest New York region, come up to Ye Olde Buffalo, where the buffalo don't roam.
There's no buffalo here.
No. Although we got little, like, statues of buffalo near one of the interstate ramps.
There was never buffalo that lived in this area.
Except for the fake plastic ones that we have littering the interstate system.
Someone just made a whole shitload of them, just left them all over, like, goddamn buffalo everywhere.
And you get the painted buffaloes in front of random places, too.
Yep,
so
yep.
We got that here. So if you are in the Buffalo-Niagara region, come to the Buffalo Comic-Con 17th and 18th, and you can stop by and see Synthaholics. See us, say hi. I'll have my recorder handy, and we can record just conversation. What do you like about Star Trek? Maybe some trivia if we decide to come up with some trivia. So come see us if you're in the area. That'll
come
be a lot of fun.
Come on, come all. Enjoy the circus. I mean the Comic-Con.
Stop right up here.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. So we're definitely going to enjoy ourselves. And it's, I guess there's also a beer festival going on right next door.
So if you don't like comics, but you do like beer.
Get drunk, then go visit the guys.
I know.
And yeah, bring us some brews so we can make it a real Synthaholics.
Bring some brews
day.
Over, and then you can get drunk, and then you can flirt with the cosplay girls. There you go.
Liquid courage. There you go.
You get this.
Liquid courage.
That's all you need.
The San Francisco treat.
coast, man.
I'm not on a coast. I guess I'm on the coast of Lake Erie, yeah. Sort of.
It doesn't quite count as a coast, but I'll give it to you.
It's water.
Yeah, it's water.
It's water.
You can't see to the other side. It sort of works.
It's wet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's radioactive sludge, you know, from all the factories on the things like we mentioned before.
Yeah, there's a lot of factories.
Start yelling Gojira.
Oh, yeah. I would love if Godzilla came out.
Gojira!
That'd be awesome.
Now you know what was really in the lake the whole time.
Stomps on everything. That's awesome.
That's why the water's so high.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyways, guys, thank you so much for listening.
Thank you all for listening. All my music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com or follow them on Twitter at warp11. You can find us at synthaholics.com. You can email us at synthaholics@yahoo.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at synthaholicduo. If you'd like to follow us individually, you can follow me at David_J_Duncan.
You can follow me, Aaron O'Brien, at Blackbird2004. Faith, where can they find you?
You can find me at Faith Hertzberg.
And please subscribe to us. We are on iTunes. We are on Stitcher. And if you have a chance, please rate and review so we can improve. And any feedback is welcome. And so we can make the show even better for you.
Live long and prosper, guys.
At the stars we did gaze. The next morning he left stinking of gin. Well, McCoy, my boy, come mix me a drink. Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink. And we'll cry till we laugh. And we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
Out in the lake. What is that coming from the lake? Godzilla!
Giancana Gina! I'm Fixer.
It's a dying moose.
It is.
Dog having a seizure.
Oh, man. That's what happens when you live in Lake Erie water. You have these big algae blooms that come up and they take over all the lake.
And lake effect snow. The snowiest effect that lakes can make.
Yeah, you don't want that. You do not want that. Yeah, this is a lake town. Good old
Smog. Where's your dragon?
Yeah, Smog lives on the other side.
In Canada.
In Canada.
Smog's Canadian, if you didn't know.
In Canada.
What an asshole, eh? I'm not sure if I'm ashamed or proud right now.
I'm proud.
A little bit of column A, a little bit of column B.
I think it's a mixture of both. I think I'm just like cracked out at Dayquil and going, wow, this is making sense. I get all the things.
Oh, man, Faith, if I were you right now, I would try to get my hands on the 1980s Dune and watch that all jacked up on Dayquil.
Yes.
That'd be cool.
I have it.
Do you?
Oh, I should actually. You know what? I'll key that up right after this, and that's what I'm going to fall asleep to. Correct out.
Oh, you're going to have the craziest dreams ever.
That's awesome.
I know, right? I fell asleep playing Ark last night, and I was all cracked out and Dayquil. I was like, dinosaurs and machine guns. Yay! It was awesome.